The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Hill and Isabel Hardman. On Thursday, we had the sentencing regarding the Southport murders. James, can you just bring us up to speed? Because of the age when he committed the crimes, he cannot get a whole life sentence.
Yes, this was about being underage. He was 17 years old, just about when the crime was committed. And therefore, it's going to be 52 years he's been sentenced to, which means he was 70 when he's released because he's 18 now. In reality, it is unlikely as though he will never be released. A bit like Myra Hindley, for instance, he will almost certainly die behind bars. And although technically he has not been sentenced to for life, it is basically as much as you can get.
And Isabel, let's go through the various responses from politicians to this, because Kemi Badenoch, the Tory leader, came out and she said that they should think about changing the law so you can have a whole life sentence in certain cases, despite the ages. And Reform came out with a slightly different idea. They went a little bit further.
Reform have moved the debate into the death penalty territory. I mean, I think there is, just before we get onto that particular proposal, there is a debate about whether the sentences are too lenient. So you've had the Southport MP referring the case to the Attorney General to see whether there's a possibility the sentences have been too lenient. Although, you know, listening to the sentencing yesterday, which was, anyone who did listen to it, it's a very hard listen, the judge was trying to make as clear as possible that this was what was, you know, what was possible within the law. And Reform are now saying that there needs to be a debate about whether the death penalty should be reintroduced for offences like this, which has got the kind of reaction you'd expect. But I would say that there are lots of very good arguments for not reintroducing the death penalty. And I think the good thing about there being lots of good arguments for that is that they can be aired. And so, you know, why not debate it? I always think it's not particularly helpful when we in politics start saying, well, that's a settled issue, because sometimes settled issues need reinterrogating by the politicians of the day. And we are almost certainly going to end up with the same conclusion, having rehearsed and probed those arguments.
James, do you think there is a sign that the mood is shifting on this? I mean, public opinion polling on the death penalty is one thing, but also Priti Patel, during her years in the Tory party, often people would try and pitch her as an extremist, someone very far to the right when she was in different briefs, by saying, well, in Question Time once, many years ago, she said that she backed the death penalty. But now you have politicians, obviously Reform at the moment, coming out and actually almost wanting to campaign on it.
Yes, and I think that it's no surprise that after you get an atrocity like this, you tend to see a spike in support for the death penalty. So at the end of last year, after the Lucy Letby sentencing, we did some polling which showed that 2/3 of the public would back the death penalty for her in that case. And there was majority support for the death penalty in cases of child murderers, etc. It tends to go up and down. I think most polling I've seen suggests it's around sort of, tends to have about 40-45% or so. So I think from a Reform perspective, you know, it's interesting whether they choose to lean into this and kind of solidify what they, their base, as it were. And so you've had, of the five MPs in Parliament, two of them have come out today, Rupert Lowe and Lee Anderson. Lee Anderson with his just a graphic of a noose. But I suppose in one sense, what's reawakened this issue, obviously, is the atrocities, but also the debate around assisted dying. I think it brings into context different questions around life. And of course, if the state should take someone's life, why not take the most heinous, the most barbaric criminals? That would be the argument. And Lee Anderson and Rupert Lowe both backed assisted dying. So I suppose they're consistent in that, you know, obviously, you know, want people to be able to take their life, but also think the state should be able to take away someone else's life. But in terms of the history about all this, obviously, it was the Wilson government, 1965, that voted to abolish hanging. And there were then a succession of votes in the 1980s. Margaret Thatcher, obviously, always believed in the support of the death penalty. And there's some fantastic clips on YouTube. You want to watch the kind of debate when it came to Parliament. And then over time, a number of politicians, you say Priti Patel, but David Davis, the Shadow Home Secretary, backed lethal injection for some criminals. Philip Hammond campaigned on hanging as well. And so it's a case of sort of this issue continuing to crop up, particularly after tragedies, when I think people feel the death penalty is the only natural recourse. And that's why that it's no surprise to see reform now talking about it.
And Isabel, on James's point there about assisted dying, do you think that death, there is now a changing attitude in the sense, obviously there's lots of controversy at the moment over the assisted dying bill as it reaches the latest stage. Kim Leadbeater is facing criticism for how the committee is stacked, this idea that they're not getting evidence from certain places and they've now had to renege on some of that. But do you think we're having debates that perhaps, you know, a couple of years ago looked quite different?
The interesting thing about David Davis backing the lethal injection is that he has also been a very prominent voice in the campaign to re-examine Lucy Letby's convictions, which is generally the sort of argument that is mounted by people who are vehemently opposed to the death penalty, because you can have unsafe convictions that, you know, at one point or another cause a very visceral reaction in the public. Now, I don't know whether Lucy Letby's conviction is unsafe or not, but he's been very clear that he thinks it's a miscarriage of justice. So I think that's an interesting point within that argument. And then when it comes to assisted dying, yeah, so this is really interesting because we started this podcast by talking about the importance of airing all arguments. And what we've seen this week, particularly in the decision by the committee that's currently scrutinising the assisted dying legislation brought by Kim Leadbeater, as you say, is that they decided not to hear evidence from the Royal College of Psychiatrists, even though this bill literally amends the Suicide Act, which is one of the, you know, one of the pieces of legislation which probably has the most direct links to the discipline of psychiatry. And I think that when you have a committee that's supposed to be doing line-by-line scrutiny that really set a lot of store during the second reading debate in the importance of consulting experts, then it does look as though it's quite one-sided, if not, I'm not sure you can have one-sided scrutiny. I think that just makes it non-scrutiny. So I think that's quite troubling. But I think it could also backfire because you've got MPs who voted for second reading because they wanted to see it proceed, who are nonetheless saying, well, you know, my support is qualified and I may not vote for the bill in its final stages when it returns to the Commons for third reading. And if they feel as though the arguments have not been rehearsed fully within committee, the detail has not been pored over, the experts that they thought they were going to hear from have not been consulted, then that could be the point at which this legislation falls over. But your question, Katie, you know, are we talking about things in a slightly different way than we would have done a few years ago? I'm not sure we are, actually, because I remember the Restore campaign back in 2012, then about, which had a number of Conservative MPs, as you said, Priti Patel. Guido Fawkes at the time was very behind it as well. I think it is one of those things that periodically comes back, and whether it's an actual policy debate or whether it's a talking point, which I think it is just a talking point at the moment, is another matter.
James, a final question to you. Do you think this is a policy position that's going to make its way into the Reform Party's election manifesto?
That is a great question. I think probably on the balance of probability not, just because it is quite a divisive issue. But I do think that it's one, again, where you see the sort of personalities come to the fore of that five-man group in Parliament, the five horsemen of the apocalypse. They all have different views. They line up differently. They voted 3-2 on assisted dying. And I suspect on this one, you get quite different answers with Nigel Farage against the return of the death penalty.
Once again, then, Nigel Farage, a trend at the moment of almost looking to the left of some of his party after we saw on things such as the Elon Musk fight. 2025 is proving to be a surprising year. Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.